Welcome to the Real AI Podcast, featuring highlights from the first and most popular weekly newsletter about real estate and artificial intelligence for real estate agents and brokers. I'm Kevin Hawkins, the Real AI Guy, and these are the highlights from this week's Real AI newsletter for January 20th, 2026. Now here's your AI host, Miles and Grace.
And today we are not talking about, you know, the sci-fi version of AI where robots are serving us breakfast.
Yeah, flying cars yet.
Not yet. We are looking at the messy, sometimes frustrating, and often invisible reality of how we're actually living with this technology right now. It's less Terminator and more. Why do I still have to copy-paste things on my superphone?
It's a reality check, isn't it? I mean, we've moved past the wow phase. We're deep into the how does this actually work, and frankly, why is it annoying me phase.
Exactly. So to help us navigate all this, we're unpacking the latest issue of the Real AI newsletter.
Like a great one.
Yeah, this comes from Kevin Hawkins and his son, Corey Hawkins. If you're in the real estate tech space, you probably know Kevin. He wrote the Amazon bestseller, The Real AI Guide for Real Estate Agents.
And these guys are not just, you know, aggregating headlines. They're in the trenches teaching professionals how to actually use this stuff.
Right. So their perspective is grounded in the daily grind, not just the hype.
And that boots on the ground view is so crucial for today. We aren't just talking theory. We are looking at why the biggest tech partnership of 2026, I'm talking Apple and Google, might actually be creating a massive productivity bottleneck.
And we'll get into why most people using AI don't even know they're using it.
And we'll wrap up with a look at why your dog might be the next big data source in your household.
I'm still very skeptical about the dog thing, but I'm keeping an open mind.
Fair enough.
So let's start with the big one. The story that's dominating all the tech feeds. Everyone has been talking about Apple finally integrating Google's Gemini into the iPhone.
Yeah.
On paper, this looks like the Avengers assembling. You have the hardware giant and the search giant teaming up to finally give us the AI phone we were promised.
It's the headline everyone wanted. You get a smarter Siri, finally.
Finally.
You get better writing tools, and you finally have genuine AI baked right into the operating system. And importantly, this partnership, it's not an exclusive marriage.
Wait.
The promise is that eventually you'll be able to plug in ChatGPT or Claude into that slot as well.
Okay, so the pitch is seamless integration. We hear that word seamless constantly.
All the time.
But Kevin Hawkins is flagging a major issue here that really disrupts that narrative. He calls it the two-brain problem. And frankly, once I got my head around this, it made me look at my phone completely differently. It feels less like a dream team and more like a disjointed mess.
It is a massive friction point that most reviews are just glossing over. The two-brain problem essentially says that when you use an iPhone in 2026, you are not interacting with one cohesive superintelligence.
No.
You're juggling two separate disconnected brains that, you know, refuse to speak to one another. It creates a kind of schizophrenic user experience.
Okay, let's break down the anatomy here because I think a lot of listeners might feel this friction without knowing what to call it. Who is brain number one in this scenario?
So brain number one is the native Apple brain. This is the intelligence that lives deep, deep inside iOS. It powers Siri. It handles your notification summaries, and it has what we call on-screen awareness.
Mm.
It knows you have a dentist appointment at 2 p.m. because it can see your calendar.
It can see it.
It knows what text message you just opened. It has eyes. It sees your digital life in real time.
Okay, so it sees what I'm doing. That sounds useful. That's what we want, right?
Yeah.
A contextual assistant. So what's the catch?
The catch is that the native brain has total amnesia regarding you.
Amnesia.
Total. It doesn't know your writing voice. It doesn't know that you're a real estate broker or a software engineer or a parent. It has no access to the thousands of prompts you've refined over the last 3 years in your paid ChatGPT or Claude accounts.
So it treats me like a generic user who just bought the phone yesterday.
Exactly.
That is a huge problem. I mean, think about the time we've all invested. I have custom instructions set up in my main AI account so it knows not to use corporate jargon or to format things in a specific way.
Right.
You're saying the native Apple brain ignores all of that history.
It doesn't just ignore it. It literally can't access it. It's a fresh slate. Which brings us to brain number two.
The other brain.
The extension brain. This is your ChatGPT, your Gemini app, your Claude. This is the brain where your AI muscle memory lives.
Mm-hmm.
It knows your context. It's the genius specialist you've trained to think like you.
Okay, so I have the amnesiac butler who sees everything and the genius consultant who knows me perfectly.
But the genius is blind.
Blind.
Brain number two cannot see your screen. It doesn't know what email Siri just summarized. It is completely walled off from the operating system's real-time data. It's sitting in a dark room waiting for you to type something in.
So let's play out the reality of using this in 2026. I have this supercomputer in my pocket. And if I want to write an email that actually sounds like me using data that's currently on my screen, what do I have to do?
You have to play middleman. You copy the text from the email on your screen, that's Brain 1's territory, and you switch apps to paste it into ChatGPT Brain 2's territory, along with a prompt reminding it who you are.
And then copy it back.
You get the output, copy it back, and switch apps again to paste it into your mail app. We have circled all the way back to the copy-paste era.
That is wildly inefficient. It feels like we've taken a step backward in workflow to take a step forward in technology. It reminds me of the early days of smartphones when apps couldn't talk to each other.
Exactly.
Why is this happening? Is it just poor engineering, or is there a reason these brains are separated?
It's not a bug, it's a feature. Or at least a very deliberate architectural choice driven by Apple's whole privacy philosophy.
Privacy.
To solve the two-brain problem, Apple would have to allow the native brain to share memory with the extension brain. That means letting OpenAI or Google access your on-device history or letting Apple access your external chat history.
Yeah.
And that opens a security door that Apple just is not willing to unlock yet.
So privacy is the wedge driving these two brains apart. We're trading convenience for security, but the result is this clunky manual labor.
Correct. But for the user, especially the professional user, the takeaway from Kevin Hawkins is so critical here. We tend to think the value of AI is the model. You know, how smart is GPT-5 or Gemini? But Hawkins argues the real value isn't the model itself. It's the memory.
The context we build.
Exactly. The history, the style, the nuanced understanding of your business. That is your intellectual property. And right now, that memory is trapped in a silo. It doesn't live natively on your device. So don't assume that buying the newest iPhone suddenly gives you a personalized assistant.
It gives you a smart assistant that doesn't know who you are.
That's the perfect way to put it.
That distinction between a smart assistant and a personalized one, that's everything. It really highlights that portability of our digital self is going to be the next big battleground. I don't want to have to retrain my phone every time I upgrade.
Absolutely not. And until you can take your context and plug it into any device or model safely, we're going to be stuck with this two-brain friction. It's the data portability fight of the 2010s all over again, but for intelligence.
Okay, I want to pivot from that high-level tech struggle to the streets. Because while we're analyzing brain architecture and complaining about copy-paste, most people are just trying to check the weather.
Mm-hmm.
The newsletter highlighted some fascinating data from Talker Research about adoption rates that paints a very different picture.
This data is startling. It really is. Because it exposes a massive gap between perception and reality. Mm-hmm. We often hear about AI adoption as if it's this conscious choice people make, like deciding to go on a diet.
Right.
But the numbers show something else entirely.
Walk us through it. What are we looking at?
Okay, so 9 out of 10 Americans are using AI on their phones.
9 out of 10.
That's nearly universal saturation.
Yeah.
If you looked at that stat alone, you'd think the whole country was tech savvy and prompting LLMs all day long.
But I'm guessing if you stopped someone on the street, they wouldn't identify as an AI user.
Far from it. Only 38% of people realize they're using AI.
Wait. So almost everyone is using it, but less than half know they're using it. That's a massive disconnect. How does that happen?
It happens because the technology has become invisible. It's the electricity effect. You don't walk into a room and say, I'm using electricity to turn on the lights. You just say, I'm turning on the lights.
The tech has dissolved into the utility.
Exactly. For example, 42% of people had no idea AI was powering their weather alerts. 86% use AI tools daily, like predictive text, enhanced photography, map routing. But when asked, do you use AI, they say no.
That's a branding issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've scared people with the term artificial intelligence and the Terminator scenarios. So when it's useful, companies just call it smart compose or portrait mode.
That's exactly right. The scary stuff is AI. The helpful stuff is just a feature. But the appetite for utility is there. The survey showed 34% of people discover a new AI feature monthly, and 28% are actively hunting for ways to save time.
They want the outcome, they just don't care about the label.
That's it.
That 28% figure is interesting, the time savers. It connects perfectly to the industry side of things. Kevin Hawkins was recently on the Real Estate AI Flash podcast with Rajeev Saja. For context, Rajev is the head of innovation at Berkshire Hathaway Home Services' Fox and Roach. So these are guys looking at enterprise-level implementation, not just consumer gadgets.
And the shift they discussed is profound. If you look back at 2023 or 2024, the conversation was all about capabilities. Look at this cool image I can generate. Look at this poem it wrote about mortgage rates.
All the magic tricks.
All the magic tricks. Now, in 2026, the conversation is strictly about workflows.
Meaning, how does this fit into my day without slowing me down?
Exactly. If using the tool requires the two-brain copy-paste dance we talked about, it's a failure for an enterprise. They aren't looking for magic tricks. They're looking for efficiency. But there were two technical concepts from that discussion that I think every business leader needs to grasp, regardless of their industry.
Okay, lay them on us. What's the first one?
The first is the shift from SEO to GEO.
Okay, we know SEO, search engine optimization. We've spent 20 years trying to get on page one of Google. What is GEO?
Generative engine optimization. Think about how search behavior is changing. People aren't just typing keywords into a search bar and then clicking 10 blue links anymore.
No.
They're asking Perplexity or ChatGPT or Gemini a complex question. Who is the best real estate agent for luxury condos in downtown Seattle who also understands historic zoning?
And that AI gives a singular synthesized answer, not a list of links to browse.
Exactly. It gives an answer. So GEO is the art of optimizing your content so that you are the answer the AI provides. If you're optimizing for keywords on a website, you are fighting the last war.
You're irrelevant.
You need to be optimizing for authority and facts that the large language models ingest and trust. If the bot doesn't trust you as a source of truth, you are effectively invisible.
That is terrifying for marketing departments. The game has completely changed rules. It's not about traffic anymore. It's about citation.
It has. And the second concept is even more critical for security. It's called MCP Servers Model Context Protocol.
Model Context Protocol. Okay, that sounds like the kind of jargon that makes people tune out. Can we translate that into plain English? Why should I care about MCP?
Think of it as a universal plug for data.
Okay.
Before MCP, if a company wanted to let an AI model access their private database, say, a brokerage wanting an AI to search their listings, it was a custom, messy, and often insecure wiring job.
Right.
You were practically handing the keys to the castle over to the AI model, hoping it wouldn't leak that data to the public.
Which is why so many companies banned ChatGPT initially. They didn't want their proprietary data leaking out into the training set.
Right. MCP changes that. It's a standardized protocol, think of it like a safe API on steroids, that allows the AI to connect to your data, read what it needs to answer a specific question, and then disconnect. It doesn't suck your data into its training model. It just references it.
So it's like visiting a library to read a book versus stealing the book?
That is a great analogy. You read the book to get the answer, but the book stays on the shelves.
Yeah.
Victor Lund, Kevin's partner, is huge on this because it finally allows enterprises to safely adopt these tools without the risk of being the product.
So if you run a business in 2026 and you aren't asking your tech team about MCP, you're building on shaky ground.
You really are.
So on one hand, we have the consumer two-brain mess, and on the other, we have the sophisticated MCP infrastructure being built for business. It really shows how the landscape is splitting.
It's just growing pains. Yeah. You're figuring out the plumbing of the intelligence age.
Speaking of growing pains, let's hit the headlines. This is our rapid-fire round where we look at the weird, the wonderful, and the worrisome news from the week, all sourced from the newsletter.
Let's do it.
I have been waiting the whole time for this. The dog collar.
Yeah.
Please tell me this isn't just a mood ring for pets.
It's a bit more high-tech than a mood ring, but the price tag is certainly serious. The Hustle reported on a new smart collar that costs $700.
$700 for a collar.
$700. It uses AI to analyze your dog's vocalizations. Barks, whines, growls, and combines that with biometric data to tell you, supposedly, how they're feeling.
See, part of me wants this. I want to know if my dog is barking at the mailman out of aggression or just pure excitement. But another part of me feels like, do I really want to know? What if the AI tells me he's just deeply disappointed in my life choices?
Or that he prefers the dog walker to me.
Father, your treat ratio is insufficient.
Exactly.
I don't need that kind of judgment in my house. But jokes aside, it shows that AI is leaking into hardware in these very niche ways.
It does. It's moving from software to physical objects.
Yeah.
And from the ridiculous to the rigorous, we have to talk about the update on GPT 5.2 from TechCrunch.
This is the scary smart update.
It is. For a long time, LLMs were great at poetry, but terrible at math. They would hallucinate numbers. GPT-5.2 seemed to have broken that barrier. It is showing massive improvements in solving complex mathematical problems.
Why does that matter for the average person? I mean, I don't need my chatbot to do calculus. I have a calculator for that.
You might not, but science does. When AI can reliably do high-level math, it can start contributing to physics simulations, engineering problems, drug discovery in a way it couldn't before. It moves from being a creative writer to a research scientist.
That's where the exponential value kicks in.
It's a huge leap.
But not every update is a winner. ZDNet had a pretty brutal review of Google's latest integration.
Yeah, the headline was effectively, "I tried Gmail's new Gemini AI features, and now I want to unsubscribe."
Oof, that is harsh.
It was a miss. The reviewer found the AI intrusive. It was suggesting things that weren't helpful, cluttering the interface with prompts.
It goes back to our earlier point about workflows.
Absolutely.
If the AI is getting in the way, it's not a feature, it's a bug, it's the Clippy problem all over again. It looks like you're trying to write an email.
Go away.
No, go away. I know how to write an email.
Precisely. And that sentiment is echoed in a report from Korn Ferry. They talk about the transition from toying with AI to working with it. The novelty has worn off. If a tool doesn't deliver ROI immediately, people are turning it off. We are done playing.
We are becoming more discerning consumers. We're not impressed by the magic trick anymore.
And that leads to the final headline from Delta Media Group, Human plus AI, AI alone.
That feels like the bumper sticker for 2026.
It is. They're looking at real estate producers, but it applies to everyone. The winners aren't the ones who try to automate their entire job and disappear. The winners are the ones who treat AI as a force multiplier for their own critical thinking.
Which ties in beautifully with the World Economic Forum report the newsletter cited. They said success depends more on leadership and critical thinking than on the tech itself.
The bottleneck is no longer the chip speed or the algorithm. The bottleneck is us. It's our ability to ask the right questions, manage the two-brain friction, and integrate these tools without losing our humanity.
But the thread running through all of this, from the Apple dilemma to the enterprise strategy, is ownership.
Ownership of the context.
And that is the thought I want to leave you with today. We talked about how the most valuable part of AI isn't the model itself, but the memory, the history, the training, the unique you-ness that you pour into it. If that memory is trapped in a blind brain or locked behind a specific company's security wall, do you actually own it?
And if you decide to switch platforms from iPhone to Android or OpenAI to Anthropic, can you take your brain with you? Or do you have to start over like a newborn?
We are building digital assets every day we use these tools. Make sure you know where that asset actually lives and who holds the keys.
Excellent points, Grace and Miles. Who does hold the keys to AI when we're training it for years? And that's this week's Real AI Podcast. Thanks for listening. Until next week, keep it real.